Welcome, and the station you have tuned into is WWGH 107.1 FM radio, and the program that you hear is called A Voice of a People with Linda Sims, and that's who I am, and this program is live. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can download free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. And that goes for cell phones, iPhones, I don't know about flip phones, tablets, computers, laptops, and your home computers. And you will have the app for WWGH, and you can take advantage of the many programs that we have for the public. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic, Hole Specialist, LLC, 309 Suite A, North Main Street, here in Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street in Marion. Telephone number 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have an ongoing announcement, free produce market every second Saturday of every month. Time, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Location, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. No appointment or pre-registration required. You just simply need to show up and provide your name and number of people in your family. We also have Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience, 740-262-0939, and they are located in LaRue, Ohio. I have a thought for you today, and it's titled, Peace. It doesn't mean to be in a place where there is no noise, no trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in your heart. But sometimes, you know, if you're like me, sometimes I go to the extreme and I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off at the adversity of different things that do happen in our lives. So this quote today is saying, just be at peace in your own heart and know that you can depend on a higher power, your God, or we like to say our Savior Jesus Christ is there to take care of you and take you through the different turmoils that appear in your life, things that we can't control ourselves. And that was from an unknown author. Okay, so there was no name to that quote. All right, so we're moving right along here, and it's Monday afternoon. I don't know why I said that, because I get to having mouth issues, so hopefully it's going to function right from now on. Okay, I have someone very dear to me whom I've met, oh, maybe 10 years ago, seems like it. We fellowship together and we cry together sometimes, and her name is Annette Johnson. She is a songstress. I think she's written her own songs, and she's also an author. And her book is called Sign Me. Yep. And I know she has trouble.
Hiding in Private Places.
Oh, Hiding in Private Places. Your song is Sign Me.
Mm-hmm.
See? Okay, and that's her voice that you hear in the background. Okay, and how are you doing today, Annette?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be here today.
I'm so glad that you could come, fill in. And listen, those of you who are listening to the program, this is a 2-hour exclusive with Annette today. So we will be on the air from now until 5 p.m. and then we will take a break for commercials, and we will be back at 5 p.m., 5:15 until 6. So if you know someone and who knows Annette, or maybe you just like the interview and how it's going, please contact some other people. If you have any questions or comments, you can also call the station here, 740-383-9944. Again, 740-383-9944. And Annette is going to start by introducing herself and telling us a little bit about herself. Okay.
Well, it's good to be here today. We're just so thankful that God has brought us this far. I can tell you a little bit about myself that we're going to be talking about for the next couple of hours. To do generalize it, it's a lot to take in, but I've had 23 surgeries of cancer. I've had both my breasts removed, half my stomach, and all my lymph nodes, and I've had my lung collapse 3 times, and you would think that that was the worst thing that ever happened to me, but it's not. I was lost at one time without God and living on the streets, and I just was running and hiding away from everything, and I didn't want to be seen or be heard. And so I lived on the streets for quite a few years. And so, but the whole thing, you know, of my life is that God has been faithful to me regardless of where I've been, at what time of my life. He always knew exactly where I was.
Amen. He does. Isn't that a good thing?
Mm-hmm. It is a good thing.
and to realize that's even better.
Yes.
Yes. It's even
you know,
better.
You can't outrun God. Mm. You cannot outrun Him. And you can't hide from Him.
No.
There's no hiding place from God.
That's great. That's a great word to put out there on a Monday afternoon, Monday evening. But that is so, so true that we cannot hide from God. And how did you find yourself in the position where you were out on the streets?
Well, it started off seemingly innocently. I don't know if you've ever been to some of the old gospel churches, but my father was a pastor of a church, and you know, and they would do testimonies and things. And so when people did testimonies and talked about their kids being on drugs, it seemed to be the only thing I was listening to, because then I would go find those kids and go party with those kids. Okay. So what was supposed to be meant for good, you know, parents were asking for their children and asking prayer, wound up being a trick of the enemy for me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would listen to their prayer request and know exactly who was doing drugs and everything and out of control. And so and I had a rebellious spirit. I was really mean. And the age of, you know, age of 2, my mom said she couldn't rock me. She couldn't hold me, nothing. And I just wanted nothing to do with her. I didn't bond with her naturally or anything, or my family. They would, you know, I would, when I played in a corner by myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to play with everybody else. So, you know, this whole rebellious spirit of mine just got worse and worse. And as I began to start drinking and carrying on, I would, you know, try to get away from my mom and everybody. And in school, I would act up. I was always fighting in school. And, you know, we wasn't allowed to wear pants or anything like that. My family was really religious. And I'd go into church. I'd go into school and take someone else's clothes and try to be, you know, I would get their pants and get their makeup. And, oh, my goodness, I did all kinds of, you know, of really stubborn things, rebelling against my mom and dad and the church and everything. And well, it got to be to where this rebellion was so bad, I was sneaking in and out of their house. And each time I got caught, oh man, mom would whip the life out of me. Dad, he would, you know, just cry, and it would break my heart. And it always worked that when my dad cried, I would stop what I was doing for a little while because it meant something to me. But when my mom whipped me, it just made me more determined.
Right.
It made me madder. And so it got to where I didn't want to be told what to do anymore. So, you know, I would go out drinking and having a good old time and really lose my mind and not even know, you know, what I was saying or doing. But I would tell somebody when I was out drinking. I would tell them where to take me and where to drop me off at in the middle of the night. And I wouldn't remember where, you know, where I told them. I didn't know. I was out of my mind.
Right.
You know, but I always wound up on the doorsteps of my dad's church.
Hmm.
Propped up, sitting in the middle of this 10 acres of land, way out in the middle of nowhere, and I would be propped up, and, you know, and left there, and I'd wake up there wondering how in the world I got there. But, you know, I know that God was dealing with my heart even while I was drunk, even while I was messed up. You know, God will go deeper than the alcohol or the drugs. He will go deeper than that, and he was. You know, I would wake up wondering how I got there. Many times I would come into my father's church falling down drunk, and he'd be up there preaching, turn the other cheek, and I'd have two black eyes.
Oh, no.
You know, I would, you know, and people always hung me, you know, they hung my dad because of me. You know, if you can't make your children,
right,
if you can't make your children, you know, obey, then what are you doing preaching to us?
About our children,
right. And I hated that. And I got to where I literally hated Christian people.
Mm-hmm.
I hated, because they had always harmed my dad because of me, you know, and it would just sadden my heart. And my mom and I didn't get along at all. I had no bonding with her. She was a Christian, but she was a Christian that still needed help. She needed some kind of counseling from her past, but my mom never got it, so she was abusive to me.
Right.
And so, you know, I began to run away from everything. First, they married me off, and I was 14. I was 14 when I hadn't had no clue what love was. Never knew it in my whole life, had no understanding of it, and they married me off at 14. I barely knew the person,
mm-hmm.
and they were supposed to finish raising me, but that wasn't going to sit well with me.
Right.
And I tried to stop the wedding, but my mom almost threw me off of a bridge. We got into a big huge fight about it, and it was really, really bad. And so, but she was bound and determined that that's what girls were meant to do. They were meant to take care of the house and to become wives.
Yeah.
So we never played outside. We never played with dolls or anything. We never, you know, they were so strict. I didn't believe in Christmas trees or anything. So, you know, as far as a childhood full of fun, no, that wasn't the way it was. We were raised to be married, and so they married me. And mom did the same thing. She married dad when she was 14.
Okay.
So, you know, this is what was normal back then.
Yeah.
It was normal for you to get married early, and so
where did you grow up at?
In Illinois. So I grew up in Joliet, Illinois, and so this was, I hated it, and I wanted out the moment I got married. I begged my mom and pleaded, please let me out. But she said no, that it would ruin the dad's church, and it would hurt him and everything. And so from that, when she said no, that was it. I went crazy. I went wild. I went absolutely wild. I was running around and doing drugs and staying out and partying and never coming home, and nobody could control me, you know. And so finally, I left. It was the last straw. I left. I thought, you know, is nobody going to tell me what to do anymore, and I'm not staying in this marriage. And so I left in the middle of the night with six of my friends. We decided that we were going to leave for the streets of Chicago.
She probably did that because you were already rebellious. So she thought that maybe. instead of just you going out there, you know, coming home with babies and all that stuff, that it was probably better for her to, you know, marry you off.
Yeah, she thought that he would finish raising me.
Right, back in the day,
really did. He was 10 years older than me, and she thought, and he was a pastor's son, and so she thought that he would finish raising me.
Right.
I wasn't about to have anybody finish raising me. Sorry, not going to happen. Not going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. I don't know. And then she used to tell me, well, just pray God will put the love in your heart for him. I'm like, oh, I don't think so. I'm like, I have prayed. It ain't working, you know. So, you know, I just, oh, it was so rough. It was so, those years were so rough. And finally, I decided to leave. And I just carried what I could carry on my back. And God, you know, the enemy always sends you things, you know, to tempt you and to lead you astray. And and during those friends that I had in church that their mamas were praying for them, they had cars. I still wasn't old enough for a car. So they had cars, so they would pick me up and take me to all these places. So when we decided to leave, we left with one of their cars. And it became a bad. So finally, we're on the road and we're leaving everything behind. I don't say goodbye to my mom or dad. I don't say, you know, nothing. And we get onto the streets of Chicago with the bright lights and, oh man.
So, was there a song birth in you at that time?
Now, at that time,
before your marriage or after your first marriage?
No, I didn't even know that I could sing.
Okay.
I had no clue.
Okay.
Even though I had sang as a child, growing up with my brother and my sisters, I was the one that didn't want to.
Right.
And so during this whole time, I just didn't have any of opinion. I had a low opinion of myself and thought I had messed up and did everything wrong. And so, you know, God still hadn't spoke, you know, to me at this time. I'm running the streets of Chicago, and we're all running from here and there and one street to the next, and we're partying. We are partying. I'm telling you, the Bible does say there's joy for a season. And there is.
Yes.
I can tell you, you can have fun in the world, but it will cost you. It will cost you greatly on stuff. And while I was partying and carrying on, we'd all bring back our stash and whatever we got and stole that day. And we would do it. We would take it from old people, anybody in the streets. We would rob. We would steal. It didn't matter what where we were or who you were on stuff, you know. But we would come back, and I would be taking so much of their stuff that they stole and brought in, of their drugs, that after a while, they didn't want me around.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's great when you can supply, you know, the drugs to everybody else, and you're all sharing, and it's wonderful.
Right.
But when somebody starts taking everything you got, and there's not enough drugs for you, your friends become very, very few, you know, and you will run out. I'm telling you, you will. You will become such a drug addict, such an alcoholic, that you will drink everything that they have and you have, anything you can get your hands on. And so I was doing this, and so one by one, my friends disappeared.
I know someone out there listening is really understanding where you're coming from, because you know we're dealing with a lot of young people on drugs here, not just in Marion, but our countrywide anyway. And some people feel like there's no hope, and so that's another good reason that you're here talking today, because eventually you're going to tell them about some hope. And like you said, when you're at your lowest point, God was there for you. Mm-hmm. You never got too low for him to reach out to you.
Right.
And people need to know that.
Yeah, you can't outrun God. There's nowhere way you can. I was, you know, taking so much, drinking so much, and doing so much drugs that I wouldn't even know my own mind most of the time. I literally slept between the dumpsters and the walls. Mm-hmm. This is where I felt safe. I felt hidden from the world.
Okay.
And I thought that I was hidden from God. I really believed God couldn't see me behind the dumpster.
I believe you.
I really believed, yeah. You know, I really, yeah. In my mindset, there's no way. And how in the world could he ever love me? How could he ever love me? I was so unlovable, and I knew it. On the streets there during this time, I threw away a child that I don't even remember signing away. I had a little boy who I just guess I became this person who didn't care what I did to him. And don't even remember it to this day. I still don't. And on those streets, I literally, every day, it haunted me. You know, how no good mom was and how no good a daughter I've been. Mm-hmm. How I hurt my dad. How I hurt everybody I ever known. Mm-hmm. You know, how, you know, this horrible person I've become. And, you know, all these things replay in your head a billion times a day. You know, as you're hiding from God, as you're trying to, you know, just, you know, not be found. You know, God is still there. He's still waiting. He's still listening. He knows exactly where you're at, you know, but I felt worthless. I felt worthless. You know, I had messed up every part of my life. And here I was living on the streets as a drug addict and an alcoholic. And my friends have all disappeared. And one day I woke up in the back of an alley. And looked around, and I was alone. And I was now living Satan's biggest nightmare for me. The plan he had set out from the beginning.
To destroy you.
To destroy me. I was living it. I was in my own personal hell he created for me. Eating out of the trash cans, I would go from day to day, eat out of the trash cans behind restaurants. I slept in abandoned buildings. I slept in parks. I slept under benches. I really liked sleeping in the bathrooms in the parks. Mm-hmm. You know, under viaducts, under bridges. It's true. I slept with a lot of people for drugs, mm-hmm. You know, just to have a place to shower.
Right.
You know, I slept with a lot of people, don't remember their names, mm-hmm. or who there was or anything, because you'll do anything. You'll do anything
to maintain the lifestyle.
Yeah. And, you know, for the first 6 months, it seemed like it was fun and it was great and all the partying. But after that, it wasn't.
It was fun.
Yeah, but after that, it wasn't no fun no more. And, you know, I hadn't called my mom or my dad. I hadn't told them I was alive. I'd been out there all this time away from home, and they didn't know if I was alive or not. And one of the things that I have regretted over the years, your mom and dad should know where you're at. You should love them enough to let them know that you're okay and you're alive. And you may not be perfect, but you're still alive, you know?
More shame.
Yeah, because, yeah. You know, that's why there's runaways.
That's
there's
true.
People who live on the streets because they're so ashamed. They're so ashamed of the life that they've created and
yes.
they've done. And they forget to call home. See, I was, at first, I would think, well, you know, maybe I should call them. And then Satan would say, no, you can't. You can't do that. They don't love you. You don't want them to know. You know, they're just going to tell you how no good you are.
Yeah.
You know, and so that would make me not call them. And I would convince myself over the next 3 years that I wasn't going to call them. There ain't no way. You know, I'm not going to let them tell me how no good I was. Yeah. But I would on New Year's night.
I already
knew. Right. Nobody had to tell me how bad I was.
Right.
Nobody's got to tell you.
True.
You already know.
Mm-hmm.
You know if you've messed up.
Right.
You know, you don't need someone pointing a finger at you and preaching over you, telling you you're no good and you're worthless.
Mm-hmm.
You know it in your heart. You know, and so I didn't want to. I didn't want to call them. I didn't want to be told I was no good. But they used to, one thing I loved about my family was that they had on New Year's night, they always had service on New Year's. They would pray the old year out and the new one in.
Right.
So I always knew where my family was come New Year's night. And sometimes I would get enough change to call the church phone number and listen for a voice. I wouldn't answer. I wouldn't say, hey, this is me.
Right.
But it was my connection to them. I would know that they're okay.
Right.
They're in church where they belong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might not be okay, but they're okay. And I would listen for the voice that would pick up on that, on that church phone. Just to let me know that all was right with the world.
Right.
You know, I may not be okay, but they were. And I thank God that they did that over the years, that I had a foundation where I could draw from if need be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was out there on the streets, no matter how much I drank, and I would drink because that was my Achilles heel. I was an alcoholic,
mm-hmm.
you know, far more than I was a drug addict. I was an alcoholic. But I would drink so hard and so much and not even know my own mind. But I could never shut out my mama's prayers. I would hear her.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of times when I was a kid in church, especially if I was in trouble, she'd be and behind me in the pew, and she'd get down on her hands and knees, and she'd be praying all about me. The whole church would hear everything I did wrong.
Oh.
Everything I did wrong. And I would hate it.
Well,
oh, I hated it. I was rebellious, and I hated everyone knowing how bad of a child I was.
Right.
And she'd be, oh, Lord, help her. You know, I can't do anything with her, Lord, you know. And so out there, when I was so messed up in my mind, I could not shut out her prayers. Now that's amazing.
You think I'm bad now? Just wait. I'll show you.
That's right. I was like, you just wait, you know. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I hated it. You know, I hated the times that she drug me to church kicking and screaming. I mean it. It seemed like we had church back then Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
Ooh.
And Lord forbid if there was a revival, I was in church for 2 weeks at a time. And they would drag me out from underneath the bed kicking and screaming, Lord, every time whipping the daylights out of me. And you would have thought I'd have got it the first 100 times, but I never got it. I didn't want to go. You know, I went my mom's strong will meant nothing matched mine on stuff. Mine was so much more powerful than hers because I outlasted her. You know, I had my own will and my own rebellious, you know, and I was bound and determined I was going to do what I was going to do. And so, you know, out there on the streets, it amazed me that I could not shut her out. I could not shut her prayers out. You know, God gives you a mama and a daddy for a reason.
Yes,
my dad was sweet and loving and kind. and he loved me dearly, and he was a man of faith, and people came from all over the world to see him and to hear him talk about God. But my mom was the tower. She was the power behind. Oh my goodness, she was the power behind. And you need both. Even though me and my mom didn't get along or anything, you still need both your parents, because in the streets it was those things, the foundations that kept me alive.
Yeah,
it kept me alive. Yes, you know, because I was spit on. I'm telling you, I was abused so badly. It's amazing. One time I woke up in the middle of a place that I should have never been at. There was drugs from the floor all the way up to the ceiling. Drugs, bags of cocaine and everything.
Oh, wow.
I woke up and I looked in that place and thought, oh my God, if I make the wrong move, I'm going to die.
Oh,
I'm going to die. I should not be in this place.
Right.
You know, and even as a sinner at that time, I still knew I was in a deadly place.
Right.
Could get me killed.
Dangerous.
You know?
Yes.
And so, you know, it's been a journey, but I can tell you the rest of it, you know, it took me 3 years before I was living my own personal hell, and I didn't know how to get out of it. And you're in the survival mode. You're just in a survival mode. It's, you see faces, but you really don't see faces. You know, it's like you know people, but you really don't know people. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very paranoid. Very paranoid.
Well, you had reason to be.
Yeah, I was very paranoid. Alcohol and drugs messed up my mind very bad. And so, you know, I would live on the while living on the streets. I got to the point to where, you know, I was barely hanging on. But
hello.
But 3 years into it, I began to see something, and I didn't know what it was. I was in the back of an alley, and I was up against a building, and I was just kind of crouched down at this building, and I was, you know, messed up in my mind, and I got to looking down at the end of this alley, and there was a street, a main street, and I was looking at it. And I was looking out of the corner of my eye because I was so paranoid that I really didn't know if I was seeing what was real and what wasn't real. My mind played tricks on me all the time. And I just, you know, was looking down the end of this alley, and I saw something moving. And it was going really slow. And I kept looking out of the corner of my eye thinking, it looked familiar to me, but I thought, no, it's not real. And pretty soon, it's going up closer to me. And after a few minutes, I look at it at the corner of my eye, and I look up, and I see that it's my dad. And I couldn't believe it, that it was actually him. And he starts rolling down the window, and he starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, he says, I've been looking for you for 3 years. Will you please get in the car? Mm-hmm. And right then, I could hear Satan screaming at me on top of his lungs, saying, no, you don't get in that car. He's going to tell you how no good and how worthless you are, how you let him down, how you've hurt your mama.
Right.
And I mean it. I heard the enemy screaming, saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept crying. And God could have sent the president. It wouldn't have mattered to me.
Right.
But this was my dad, the only soft spot I really ever had.
Right. The love he had for you.
The love he had for me. And so he keeps begging me to get in there and to get in this car. And finally, I get up, and I feel I'm shaking violently all over my body. And I'm starting to make that first step to go across the car on the other side of the car. And I'm walking that way, and I could feel hell so strong. Mm-hmm. I could feel it. And I go to open the door. I can barely open the door because I'm literally that scared of his first words.
Right.
I finally get in, and I curl up in the car. I literally put my knees to my chest, mm-hmm. and I put my arms around my knees, and I'm curled up, shaking violently because I was afraid of his first words.
Right.
But then he just turned, and he looked at me, and he says, "You know, I don't agree with your life, but I love you. And God loves you." And when he said God loved me, I could not believe it. It was like lightning went through me, like a lightning bolt went through me. How could God love someone like me?
Right.
I had heard my daddy preach mm-hmm. thousands of messages.
Right.
Always understood it for other people.
Yeah, it works like that.
Never,
it works just like that.
Never understood it
for
me.
Not my God, no, you know.
Never understood it for me until that moment when he's telling me, "I love you and God loves you." A bolt of lightning went through my heart, and I knew it had to be true because I was no good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was proof to me that it had to be real, because right. there was nothing good about me, mm-hmm. not one thing.
Right.
And God still sent word that he loved me.
Amen.
And so, you know, I didn't leave right away. He begged me to stay in the car and to leave with him and to go home, but I wasn't ready to face facts. Mm-hmm. I wasn't ready to face everything I had did.
Right.
I still needed time. You know, I still was in somewhat rebellious state. I still, you know, I loved my dad. I wanted to go home. He cried. He cried and begged me please to come with him.
Right.
And I wouldn't go. But he didn't. He told me, he said, "Well, please at least call me.
Mm-hmm.
At least call me. Let me know you're alive."
Right.
And I agreed in the end to let him know that I was alive. You know, but it would take a while for me to come off the streets.
Right.
It took a while. You know, it wasn't easy for me. There was too much that I had did wrong, and too many things that was haunting me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so guilt-ridden from my dad, from hurting my father. I was so guilt-ridden from losing my son. You know, I was so guilt-ridden for being a horrible, you know, daughter. And, you know, I was just guilt-ridden totally from being an alcoholic and a drunk and a drug addict and just the guilt was eating me alive. It was eating me alive.
It takes a lot for us to forgive ourselves.
It does.
You know, when we, like you said, when we know we've done the wrong thing and we're going the wrong way, and not only do you hurt yourself, you hurt people who love you, you hurt people that you meet. Like you said, you were still in their drugs and things, you
mm-hmm.
know, just so you could have your high and what you needed, but we hurt people,
and that's really, really true. You know, I was so lost and so blinded. The enemy truly blinds you. He really, truly blinds you. And, you know, and you wind up hurting a lot of people, yes? And for a while, sin was really fun.
Yeah.
But then there's a price. There was a price. For 20 years, I did not have my son. For 20 years, I would beg to be in his life and plead. And I always had somebody standing in my way where I could not spend time and could not see him. And it was 20 years I had to fight to get my child back and, you know, to a relationship where I could call him, you know. And so, you know, it took a while. When being on the streets, I stayed for quite a while longer. But after a while, there was this family of people that came, they would pass out missionary Bibles, little bitty red missionary type little Bibles. They would come to the streets. Mm-hmm. And they would come back there in the alleys, and they would pass these little Bibles out, and, you know, you take one and you throw it away, you know. Right. But they just kept coming back, and after a while, they started asking me if I would like a job. And I told them no for a long time. They said, we'll pick you up and we'll drop you off. You know, and I was like, no, I'm not doing this. And they just kept asking. And finally I said, okay, I will go. I will, you know, I'll go. And they had a restaurant. And they would take me in the back of this restaurant, and I would prep food. Mm-hmm. Well, it was my first little job, but they preached at me from the moment I got there to the moment I ended.
So you ran right into what you
hated it.
From, right?
Oh my goodness, I hated it. Every day I swore up and down I was not going back.
Right.
Yet somehow the next day I would be right there waiting for them to pick me up. Oh my goodness. And they would preach to me and drive me crazy. They really were. And I thought, I cannot take this. But I had a job.
Yeah.
And then it led to my first little apartment.
Okay.
You know? And I'm thinking, okay, I'm still drinking and everything, but I've got an apartment. Mm-hmm. And I've got, you know, I've got a bed to lay in. All right, I can do this. Well, then it got to the point to where, you know, I'm off the streets. My life looks different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, thinking about going to church, thinking God was dealing with my heart. But I still hated the preaching, and I still didn't, you know, I wanted to do things my own way. And I would lay in bed at night screaming at God, I can't stop drinking. I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be a Christian because I can't stop drinking.
So stop all the preaching to me. Is that the message you're trying to get to
yeah.
God?
I'm like, please, please, give me a break. I can't stop drinking. Quit preaching to me and stuff. But I would literally lay in bed, and I would do this over and over and over and scream, God, please, you know. And then I finally saw this church, and I would drive. I got my first little car, and I would drive around that church, and God said, go in. I'm like, nope, not going in. Nope. Not doing that. And he would. I'd go to that church, and I'd drive around, and he'd say, go in. Well, finally, after a good 6 months, I finally drive into the parking lot and sit in that parking lot.
Well, we're going to stop it right here because we will have another hour with Annette Johnson, the songstress and author, and she has been sharing with us her life history, her autobiography. And those of you who have been listening, I'm sure you're waiting on the edge of your seat to find out what happened next with Annette. And hopefully she will share some music with us that was birthed out of her own experiences. And she is truly a lady of God now, and probably has been for a long time. But some of the roads that she has traveled, I know some of you may be able to associate yourselves with those things, because you know we all have a way of thinking that we know it all, we know what we're doing, we know what we want in our lives, and then we run up into these upheavals and roadblocks and brick walls, and it's like, wow, where am I at now? Who can help me? Where can I go? And all along God had his hands on her life.
Amen.
And she
Amen.
Didn't really know it, but a lot of times we don't know it. We think that we have escaped him, and wherever we go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
So just hold on for the next hour. Like I said, call someone and tell them you're listening to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. And connect with us at 5:15 on the same station. Thank you.
A few seconds. Okay.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary First Lady of Broadcasting in Marion, Madge Cooper.
If you have a new announcer and he's not from this area, you make sure that before he went on the air the first time, you said, it is not Bucky Russ.
Then got back into radio, and now I'm doing some syndicated shows for Ducks Unlimited and for the Toyota Motor Company.
You got a commercial in there, and you weren't authorized.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Madge, we got the first little portable recorders. Remember those? And I still got mine.
Put hers in front of the microphone to play it?
Yes, yes.
You brought it back to New York, didn't you?
I need a mic.
There you go.
Sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. And I got that thing to New York interviewing a Paris designer. And they said, well, you know, you can't work this anywhere up here. You have to go down to the basement where there is DC current. So I took Pauline Trichet. I took Pauline Trichet into the basement of this hotel to interview her there. And she is as slick an announcer as I ever saw. I mean, a designer. She's probably one of the best designers. She just took to that very well. It worked for that one. Then I did some other one sometime while I was still there. It didn't work.
Madge Cooper, Madge Guthrie.
You won't be a millionaire, but it's the best job in the world.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com. Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs. Telephone number 740-751-1783. The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from the day you win the prize to pick the prize up. You can only win once every 30 days. WWGH Radio staff reserves the right to question any and all prize winnings. The WWGH offices are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for prize pickup. The WWGH offices are located at 559 East Center Street in the lower level of the Beltone Building. Thank you so much for playing fair.
Tecumseh is quality family entertainment in your own backyard, a destination for history buffs, theater lovers, and families for over 40 years. Experience this world-famous outdoor drama near Chillicothe, Ohio this summer. Visit TecumsehDrama.com today or call 740-775-0700 for information and reservations.
This is Margaret Hazlett, and you can catch my friends Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and Marianne Michaels every Friday from 12 to 10 to 1 for the Exchange Club. They discuss topics of the day and take your calls at 740-383-9944.
This is Patty Worcester with Marion Midget Football, a staple of the Marion community for over 45 years, providing sportsmanship, friendship, and exciting competition. To our Marion youth, 740-382-4558.
Hi, are you looking for a church that is Bible teaching and Bible believing? I invite you to Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We were at 209 East Water Street. Our Sunday morning service is at 10:30. We have Sunday school at 9:30 in the morning. Evening service at 6:30, along with youth group at the same time. We do have a midweek service. You can reach us at 740-494-2222 or prospectccf.com. We'd love to have you come and visit. Get plugged in and see that there's true hope for tomorrow and hope in your life. God bless you. Have a good evening.
Dinosaurs. You've seen them in movies, TV shows, even textbooks. But what were they really like? Find out in Columbus at Cosi's American Museum of Natural History Dinosaur Gallery, an exhibit that will have you looking at dinosaurs in a whole new way. It's part of Cosi's unique partnership with New York's American Museum of Natural History, a collaboration that may have you seen